History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And we know now they don't have to go untold if we're willing to take some of those simple steps to preserve them, like asking thoughtful questions and investing a little time in listening. We never really know how much our perspective is going to change. The mission is to make sure we honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The man we're going to hear from today is not a member of that generation, but as we'll hear, he's done as much to honor them as just about anybody could, because his father helped him realize how much he owed to the Americans who liberated his hometown in Normandy. I'm going to let him explain it to you. In recent weeks, we've heard from a couple veterans from the 90th Infantry Division. Joining them at their most recent reunion was a 70-year-old Frenchman who spent more than half his life in the French Air Force and has a museum honoring the 90th Division at his home in the community of Perrier. I wanted to understand what made Christian Leveauf devote so much of his energy to recognizing and celebrating the tough hombres of the 90th.
Well, I have to say it has been a long story. I grew up with the veterans of the 90s. You know, my father was 13 during the landing in 1944 at Normandy, and he got interested at trying to know which was the outfit that had liberated Perrier. My birth town and my parents' town too. By the time everybody would say that the Americans had liberated the city, you know, but not knowing exactly who. So I do remember well, you know, in 64, it was the 20th anniversary of the landing. My father and I were in Utah Beach attending the ceremonies, and my father was able to get close to General Collins, who had been commanding the 7th Corps at Normandy in 44, you know, and just went asking him who liberated Perrier. Of course, General Collins didn't know, huh? But he was able to put my father in touch with the historians in the Pentagon, and soon after, the historians told my father that the 90th Infantry Division had liberated Perrier and the area. Then my father came in touch with the executive secretary of the association by the time, Denby Steele. You know, a few months later, first veterans of the 90s started to come to visit my parents in Perrier, you know. It was in 67, and it has never stopped after, okay? Because we still had with us two of them last June, okay? Gene Kleindl will be again here today, and Corbin McGriff, who sadly passed away a few weeks after, you know. So this is the way I began to come in touch with the veterans of the 90s, you know, so let's say something like 60 years ago, okay.
And how old are you?
I'm 70.
So most of your life, the veterans of the 90th Division have kind of been like your uncles, your family.
Yes, you're right, you know. One of them, Ed Hamilton, who commanded the 1st Battalion of the 357th Infantry Regiment, you know, and took part in the main battles at Normandy. Well, he met with my father in the 70s, and the two of them became so close friends that they even declared themselves as brothers, you know. So Ed is something like my American uncle, you're true, you know, and his daughter, my cousin, Diana.
And how many veterans of the 90th or family members do you think you've entertained in Perrier?
Well, when my father passed away, you know, we tried to go through all the guest books with records in them, and we came to the average number of 2,000.
Wow.
Can you imagine? In a small house in Perrier, 2,000 American people. Well, of course, today I'm very lucky to have a large address book.
And I'm sure you have perspective I mean, we can imagine some of the obvious things, but can you give us a sense of why you think it was so important to your father to make those connections? And it sounds like he collected a lot of artifacts, too.
My father was working as an engineer, building power lines right after the war, you know. So you have to imagine that at Normandy, right after the war, all the power lines had been destroyed because of the combat, or there was no power in the distant farms. So he would have to go every day in the fields to put up, poles, to bring the electricity to the places. And by the time, you know, let's say 10, 15, 20 years after the war, you know, when you were walking in the fields, you were still able to find many artifacts from the combat. So my father collected a few artifacts, you know, but he was mainly an historian, you know, so I think he collected the largest amount of information about the 90s at Normandy that anybody has ever made, okay?
And I'm sure you can't tell us about all of them, but maybe can you give us a few examples of some of the items that have been collected and then maybe the connections that have come through those items?
Well, you know, and most of the things that you find in battlefield, you know, in the remaining trenches or foxholes, are most of the time stuff that belong to soldiers who have been or killed in action or wounded in action, okay? Usually, when you are a soldier, you're not supposed to lose your rifle or your helmet or whatever, you know? So what you find is has been the property of most of the time wounded or dead soldier, you know? And sometime you will find just a piece of helmet, only a remaining part of the iron that made the steel helmet, okay? So it means that the guy just vanished like that, okay? When you go to the cemetery at Normandy, you know, well, you have almost 10,000 soldiers buried here, okay? But when you go to the Wall of Missing, there are something like 1,500 names only for 2 months at Normandy, okay? So it means there are 1,500 guys who are somewhere nobody knows, of course. From time to time, they are able to find a body. Could be German or American, you know? Sometimes they are able to put a name on the body. Not always, okay? And so if they are unable to find the name, then the guy will be buried as an unknown soldier. If they are able to find the name, then they will add a specific sign on the wall right in front of the name, you know, telling that they were finally able to identify him. But there are still many, many, many to remember.
I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes. It sounds like a whole lot of your life has been wrapped up in what happened before you were born and honoring those who did something for you before you even existed.
Yes, that's right. You know, because it's probably not the same, you know, all over France, you know, but when you speaking especially about Normandy, okay, there is no family that went through this part of the war without losing something, okay? Well, first, we have to say that there was an average something like 20,000 French civilians who were killed during the battle, okay? Just being at the wrong place, wrong time, between two sides, okay? And so, as said, there is no family that went through this war without losing something. Could have been only losing their house, like my grandparents, you know. My village of Perrier was bombed twice by American bombers, you know, killing 127 people. But my grandmother would always tell me we were happy because we were alive, okay? And so during those bombings, my grandparents lose their house. My grandfather lost his cattle. But many of the inhabitants of the city, they lost relatives, you know, parents, children. So this is why I can tell you that there is no French family from this part of Normandy that is unable to remember that part of the war at Normandy, okay? And so I grew up with this, all this historical background, you know, because I was lucky to be able to come in touch with all the American, but not only the American, but also with the German veterans, you know, when I was 10 years old, and that it has never stopped after, you know. So it, well, they have all have been part of my life, okay? And I feel a little bit sad because I know we are getting to the end of the story, okay? Well, the Vern is one of the youngest, you know, he's only 98, you know, but Mervyn, who is coming 100, and Gene Kindle is almost 103. When he was only 102 last June, he was with us at Normandy, okay? So it gives you a little hope for your future, huh?
Well, and when it comes to the future, clearly you're investing a great amount of time and energy and passion into preserving history, extending a legacy, telling a story. What is the story that you want future generations to understand? Why is this so important to remember?
Well, I think that somebody who said, you know, those who are unaware of their past will have to live it again or something like that, you know. So, and when you just look at the news, you can say that, well, this is probably true, you know. So I inherited of a part of the heritage of a legacy, and knowing it, I felt that I had to forward it to the coming generation, you know. So we have been building a few memorials at Normandy, okay? Because my feeling is that when you are able to build something that will stay, it is probably better, only my feeling, okay? It is probably better than just do a big event. People will only take pictures, but maybe in a week or so they would have forgotten everything about it. So we have been spending a lot of time and energy at building memorials when we were able to know something of what had been happening here, okay? The way of freedom through Normandy was paved with thousands of anonymous deaths. So when you are able to know who was killed here, when he was killed, how it happened, so my feeling is it's my duty to forward this information to the future. So, and to me, the easiest way to make it is to build a small memorial, you know, remembering the place. So we have been, since 2000, we have been building quite a few memorials around, you know, because only around Perrier there had been so many places of combat, so many battlefields, you know. But so we dedicated another memorial last year, we dedicated another one last June, and of course part of the job was to be able to find the relatives in the States, to invite them to come if they wanted to come, you know, but mostly to tell them that somewhere in France there were people that were still thankful enough and wanted always to show their gratitude to the American soldiers.
If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, you can get a glimpse of the memorial and museum honoring the 90th Infantry Division that represents the culmination of decades of commitment by both Christian and his father. And when we come back, some examples of the kind of connections that have been made as a result. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 2,000 veterans will have visited their memorials for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a different feel today as we hear not from one of the liberators of Europe, but from someone whose hometown was liberated. If you go to Perrier, population 2400 in Normandy today, you'll find a museum and memorials honoring the men of the 90th Infantry Division. The man responsible for that is Christian Lavolf, whose father was a teenager when those tough hombres came through and restored freedom to Perrier.
I understand you even had the twin sister of a pilot whose plane went down come to your home to see what was left of the plane her brother flew?
Yes.
How in the world did that happen?
Well, another long story, you know, I don't want to keep you. First, I have to say, you know, but wishing to, the French people to be able to learn more about their past, you know, many books have been written in English, and many soldiers have sometimes written their memoirs, okay, only for their family, for their children, you know. And so this has been part of my job since 5 years or something. I've had to making translations into French of memoirs that have been written in English, okay, so that the French people can much easier have a knowledge of what happened in their part of the country. Mm-hmm. So we have been publishing free books so far, you know, and well, I'm working on the next one for next year. Okay.
Wow. Tell me about the plane. This was an aircraft, a P-47 Thunderbolt,
yes,
that your father discovered?
Well, when my father was a refugee, you know, after the bombing of Perrier, early June 1944, my grandparents and my father, uncle, and so they were refugees in a farm outside in the countryside. Everybody tried to find a shelter, you know, outside of a city, just in case of another bombing. And they were lucky because another bombing happened after, okay?
Ooh.
And so, as far as I remember, they were having lunch or something like that when they heard a big noise outside, and they just rushed outside to give a look, and they were able to spot two P-47 American fighters, you know, the Thunderbolts that had been colliding in mid-air collision, okay, above Perrier. One of them fell almost like on a belly landing or something like that, started to burn, and was scrapped right after the war. Of course, the two pilots were killed in the crash. The other one went down almost like a stone, you know, hit the ground, opened a big crater. The local people went to try to take what was remaining of a pilot, okay? And then they just filled up the hole, and time went over, you know, and everybody almost forgot about it. So when I was something like 12 years old, my father told me, well, we are going to try to find the spot of a crash, okay? By the time, there was no metal detectors available, okay? In the late 60s or, huh? And so we went to buy iron gauges, like the kind you use in when you look for people in the snow, in the avalanches, okay? And so we went checking all the field like that, until we were able to hear the bong bong sound of, okay, of some part of the plane. By the time, we were only the two of us, and we only had shovels, so we were able to find only small parts of a plane, but we were sure that we were on the right spot, okay? It took 10 years to come back, coming back with, a backhoe, to be able to get almost very remaining part of a wreck outside of the dirt, you know, including the engine. And the engine, you know, Pratt and Whitney, you know, R28 red, you know, yeah. Cylinder, eh? Uh-huh. 18 cylinders, you know. That's a big pot of iron, you know. So the engine stayed in my parents' backyard during 25 years or something like that. So I knew that someday I would have to take care of this engine, okay? And so when in 2015, when I became the chairman of our local association, you know, Normandy 44, you know, my father had been the chairman, I had been the deputy chairman, so I became the chairman. And so I told to the board members, well, we are going to try to do something out of this engine, okay, and try to make a memorial out of it. So we worked on it, and we were able to have a memorial built that we dedicated in 2017, okay. And of course, I wanted to have any possible relative of a pilot coming to attend the ceremony, you know. So I went looking for someone. All we knew is that the pilot had been buried in a place named Longview, Texas. By the time, I had a good friend living in Houston. I'd been helping him to find information about his uncle who had been killed in a crash in France. Okay, so I told him, would you be ready to help me? And he said, of course, you know. So I told him, well, all I know is that this guy, you know, was buried in Longview. So we went checking, you know, calling the sheriff, calling the city hall, calling to try to find anybody who could have been a link with the family. And he came back to me and said, well, I'm sorry, I found nobody. But don't worry, Christian, I'm in charge, okay? and so after that, he put ads in the local papers. Didn't work either. But he said, don't worry, Christian, I'm in charge, okay? And after that, he put ads on the radio. Didn't work either. Don't worry, I'm in charge, okay? And finally, he put an ad on TV for Memorial Day. So it was in end of May 2017, and the dedication was planned to be on June 24, you know, on the anniversary day of a crash. So we were getting pretty close of it. But this time it worked. And I got a call from a lady from Fort Worth telling me, well, a friend of mine saw my name on the TV telling that I had to call somebody in France. So here I am. And so I told her, well, I've been looking for you for a long time. You know, the ceremony is coming soon. We would like, of course, you to come, but can you come? Say, well, let me check with my husband. And she called me back the next day and said, we are coming.
This is an amazing story.
Well, we have quite a few like that, you know. It's,
I believe it.
And you feel so happy when it works, you know, because it makes a big difference, okay?
Yeah. So she says, I was told I'm supposed to call you. When you heard her voice and you realized you finally found a connection to this pilot you've been looking for years, really, right?
Yes.
What did that feel like when you finally had that connection?
Well, of course, I felt happy and relieved, you know, because when you work hard on something, everybody is happy when you are able to have a happy ending to a story, you know. And so she came with her husband and daughter, and she told me my mother and this pilot, they were twins. They were twins. And my mother never recovered from the loss of her twin brother, you know. And so my childhood has always been ruined because of my mother never being happy, always mourning the loss of her brother, okay?
Wow.
So by coming here, I had the feeling that I could be able to put a happy end to the story, okay? And so she came with a small box of ashes from her brother, and we just put the small box of ashes in one of the cylinders of the engine, okay? so that the twins could be together again forever. Okay.
Wow. And where is that engine now?
Well, it is downtown Perrier, you know, in the city.
So anyone listening to this can go visit this.
Of course, you know, and well, we had been building memorials that had been mostly dedicated to the infantry first, you know, because of the 90th Infantry Division. So most of the memorials, including our main one, which is named the Four Braves, you know, showing four statues. Okay, but most of them, they were small or bigger memorial, but mostly dedicated to the infantry. Okay, and so I've been myself in the French Air Force during 40 years, you know, so I care for planes and plane histories too. Okay, so I wanted to be able to do something that could be related to the action of the U.S. Air Force at Normandy. So it was just the opportunity to have this big engine and try to make something out of it to remember, you know, the pilot. So through this two guys, you know, we were able to remember all the American pilots, you know, who have been losing their lives for the freedom of France. And after, I felt that there were memorial missing for the men who were tankers, you know. There was the 712th Tank Battalion that was attached to the 90th. And of course, quite a few of them were also killed in their Stuart or Sherman tanks. So this is why we made the decision to build two specific markers, you know, the one that we dedicated last year, that was dedicated to the crew members of a light tank, a Stuart one, you know, that hit a mine outside of Perrier in the afternoon of July 27. 1944, the day when Perrier was liberated. It took a while, you know, to be able to put a name on all the men who had been killed or wounded, you know, in this crash. And especially because, well, the four men that were in the tank, they got killed or badly wounded when the tank hit the mine, you know. But the soldiers, you know, sometimes they were just riding in the back of a tank, you know. Instead of walking, you know, for right. distances, they were just in the back of a turret, you know. And so this time when the tank was hit, it just, how to say, flipped off. And the two men that were on the tank, they got crushed under the tank. And so, well, it took me a while to find who those two guys could be, okay. But, well, I think 99%, we have a good names, you know, but anyway. Makes no big difference, you know, but we wanted to be able to also show our gratitude to these two ones, you know. Last June, we also dedicated another memorial to another crew of, you know, Sherman tank. There was a big battle going on right outside of Perrier, you know, the last battle before the liberation of Perrier on July 26th. The 359th Infantry Division, one of the three regiments of the 90s, they were in a bad position, you know. So they asked for a rescue from the tankers. It is a marshy area with only a small river in the middle of it. When you go to see it today, we say, well, it's not much about it, okay? But at the time, it really was hell, okay? So there was one bridge over the river, but of course the Germans had destroyed the bridge. And every time the American engineers would try to get close to it in order to try to repair it, they would be shelled by the Germans, okay? So there was only, instead of a main road, there was only a kind of back road, you know. So the Sherman tanks, they went through that back road, you know. But when getting close to the place of a battle, having to get back on a dirt road, you know, they stopped because they guessed that the first one would probably be shot by a German anti-tank gun or by a mine somewhere, you know. They still had to cross the river through a ford. So they stopped, they drew straw to know who would go first. Tullio Micheloni, he was the sergeant, he was the tank leader. He said, well, let's go. The regular crew in a Sherman tank is five men, okay? But guessing it could be a suicide mission, he got one of his guys out of the tank. And so the four of them started to go on this dirt road, you know, but, well, after a few yards, they hit a big pile of German mines, and of course the four of them were killed in it. So this is why last June 8th we dedicated a marker almost at the right spot where they had been killed. So when you are able to roam around the countryside, around Perrier, you know, from time to time you are able to spot one of these markers and read a few names and probably have a small thought for this guys, you know, who came from so far fighting for people they didn't know. So our feeling is that we have to say thank you.
And he continues to do that in very powerful ways. It's time for our final break, but when we come back, some final thoughts on why this history is so important to preserve. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
When times get tough and budgets get tight, a lot of businesses start slashing their marketing budgets, which all too often turns into a costly mistake. Instead, what if you could customize that investment to zero in on your target audience with surgical precision? And why am I saying what if? Because I already know you can with Search Strategy Marketing. It's not about how much you spend. It's about the strategy behind it. And Search Strategy Marketing is ready to prove it to you with a free, no-obligation assessment of your current efforts. Learn how to outrank your competition with a free, customized action plan just for Hometown Heroes listeners. Just go to hometownheroesradio.com and click on that light bulb logo for Search Strategy Marketing. It doesn't matter what your business is. Search Strategy Marketing can lead you to the best way to connect with your customers. So look for that light bulb logo today at hometownheroesradio.com and plug into the power that can take your business to the next level. When prices start going up, we all look for ways to save. So here's a simple message for you. Look no further than EECU. Did you know you can finance your mortgage through EECU? How about a home equity line of credit? EECU makes HELOC loans easy. And when the car business is all over the map, the auto loan rates are as steady as can be. EECU is a not-for-profit credit union, not a bank. So the members always win. Go to myeecu.org to become a member today or call 1-800-530-3328.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes in an episode that flips the script in a way. We've heard so many World War II veterans over the years sharing what they went through in liberating occupied Europe 80 years ago. But isn't it fascinating to hear the perspective of someone whose hometown was liberated in that process? That's what we've been doing today with Christian Leveuf, whose home in the small community of Perrier, France, now includes a memorial and even museum honoring the tough hombres of the 90th Infantry Division who liberated Perrier.
So if I go to Perrier and I come to this memorial and look at this P-47 engine, the ashes of the pilot are in one of the cylinders?
Well, nobody knows it. Okay.
They do now. Wow. And you've just given me a little tiny slice of the years that you've dedicated to this. I can feel how important it is to you. I imagine you don't stop. You probably have a few more projects you're working on right now. Is there something you're hoping to be able to do if all the pieces connect?
Well, I said, I'm getting old, 70, you know, so I've been building something like 6, 7, 8, 9 memorials, you know, so, there is always room for something coming up. As I told you, right now I'm keeping on working on the translation into French of another book, okay, which to me is important too, because like the memorials, I hope that the books are able to stay longer, and that the French people will still be able to read and learn about their past. Yeah. Well, my feeling is that it's my job to do it. Well, they will make what they want to do out of it. But right now the plans were to be able to attend this reunion of the 90s Association. You know, I hope there will be another reunion in 2 years or whenever. You know, so we are able to come back and we'll let the attending people know that very small group of dedicated people somewhere at Normandy still trying to do their best to remember the deeds of the American soldiers.
So when you see these guys, when you see Vern and Jean, and what do you see?
Well, most of the time I see young guys. We were something between 18, some of them were grandfathers, you know, when they were 25, okay? They were the old guys, huh?
Yeah.
Well, most of them were around 20, you know, so I've been reading so many personal stories about them, you know. I've been meeting so many of them right on the battlefield where they were wounded, where they had lost one of their closest buddies, you know. I remember when I was a kid, I was amazed how those guys could remember the place even before going back to the place, you know. So they were going back to a place that had been so strongly printed in their mind, you know. So they were just able to close their eyes and tell you, I remember there was a field opening on the right and there was a barn right on the left. And say, and well, it had been 20, 30, 40 years before, you know, but it was still so present in their mind. So I could only imagine how strong the print could have been. And the print is strong when you are scary, things like that, you know. The daily life of a soldier, you know, you have to imagine that you have to spend 24 hours a day living in a wet foxhole with cold and fear with only friends.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine.
Yes, it is hard to imagine what they had to go through. Okay, so when I see them, even when they are 100, you know, I still can see them, because I myself, I have the places where they have been, you know. I have seen the foxholes, I have seen the trenches, okay. So I know where they were, I know what kind of jungle it was around them, you know. And so when you are unable to see something like 20 yards away, not knowing if a guy next to you is a friend or an enemy, okay? So, of course, there was friendly fire too, because you have to imagine that even when it is hard at daytime, when the night comes, you know, when you hear the noise, you shoot. Mm-hmm. This is it, you know? This isn't, you know, when you look at the movies, things are much more easier, you know? Good, bad, black, white, whatever, you know, but no. The story of war at Normandy is always something between, okay?
And you said you were in the French Air Force for 40 years?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Were you a pilot? Did you do something else?
Well, no, I only became a private pilot, you know. Because of my glasses, I couldn't be a pilot, you know. I only was a radar engineer, okay?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. You know, one question that comes to mind, and if there's anything else that you want to add, feel free. And I'm amazed by how much of your life you've given to this cause, you know, that you've dedicated to making sure the rest of us have some kind of idea and that we don't forget these sacrifices. So it's clear how much you've given to so many. But I imagine in giving so much, there are probably some things that you've ended up receiving too. Can you identify some things that you're thankful for that were unintended consequences of all the time and energy you've devoted to this?
Yes, of course, I'm here. So this is a direct consequence of it. And before being here, my wife Evelyn have been in the States for 4 weeks already, you know, just roaming around your country, you know, and as said, you know, we are lucky to have a large address book all through the States, you know, because or thanks to the war, or thanks to the soldiers, to the veterans of the 90s, and now to their children, grandchildren, their relatives, you know. So we are just mostly visiting your country, you know, and being received everywhere, you know, and hosted by friends, old friends, new friends. So some that we have met 40 years ago, some that we have met last June. Okay, so this is a direct consequence. So we are very, very happy with Evelyn to be able to be here and so well received.
You probably have some perspective on how World War II is remembered in America versus in France?
Well, when American people come to Normandy, I would say, okay, because as said, when you get to other parts of France, just because there is no direct involvement in the war, you know, like at Normandy, you know, most of the French people, they don't know much about what happened at Normandy. They would, some of them might know that the landing happened at Normandy on June 6th, but Paris was liberated on August 25th. But what happened between, they don't know, okay? But when the American people come to Normandy, they will all tell you that they have the feeling that we do remember very well that part of history, which is true for Normandy, especially in June, I would say. Okay, but see, we receive American people, you know, relatives of veterans all year round. We have a small museum in Perrier. With the members of the association, we opened a museum back in 2019. Okay, it happened that, as said, my father collected few items, you know, when he was working in the fields, but mostly he had collected a big amount of information. So most part of the information will go to the French archives, so that the historians, coming historians in the future, are able to find the information they are looking for. My father had always hoped that the city of Perrier would open a museum to show his collection and stuff like that. But for some reason, it never happened, okay? This is it. So when my childhood buddy, you know, Gabriel, became the mayor of Perrier, and when I became the chairman of the association in 2015, we told to each other, if not the two of us, nobody will never make it, okay? So give me a building, I'm going to manage it. Okay, uh-huh. So this is the way it happened. So after starting from 2017-18, you know, we got a small building downtown, close to the Four Braves, close to the City Hall, close to the church, perfect location. And we started working on it, and we opened it on July 2019, okay? And we received people coming from the States or from Germany or from any other country all year round, okay? And we are, of course, only focused of with all the events that are linked with the liberation of Perrier. There are so many big museums that will tell you about the landing and over combat, you know, but we only want the local people or the visitors be able to understand what happened with the two bombings of the city, with combat on the ground, and how long it took to be able to make it to Perrier, you know. When you think that there are only 18 miles as a crow flies between Utah Beach, the landing beach, and Perrier, it took 7 weeks.
Wow.
It took 7 weeks to make 18 miles, okay?
And a lot of lives.
And a lot of lives, of course, yeah. So most of the people, when you speak about Normandy, they mostly think about D-Day, the landing. But for Utah Beach, the landing was probably the easiest. Only 200 men killed, okay? Nothing comparable with Omaha Beach or whatever, you know. And the trouble came the day after. Mm-hmm. Having to fight through the hedgerows, they were not prepared. The American soldiers, they were green soldiers. They had not been trained for fighting in the hedgerows. The Germans, they had been there for four years already, okay? And they knew how to use this specific landscape, how to use how you could hold the field, you know, by just putting two machine guns in each corner, you know, and with crossing fire, stop everybody. So until July 25th, the war at Normandy was something similar to World War One. You know, taking a field, losing it, taking a village, losing it, digging trenches, and trying to get to the next hedgerow. So of course, Eisenhower, Bradley, they were tired of us standing, non-moving front line. So this is why they put up a big operation named Cobra Operation. And well, in the morning of July 25th, they sent 2,000 bombers that in a very narrow corridor destroyed and killed almost everybody in the German lines. And Patton, who had been waiting to be able to move, was ready to rush through it with his Third Army. So after July 25th, after Cobra Operation, it really began the war of movement. See, it took 7 weeks to come from Utah Beach to Perrier, but after that, and July liberated July 27. But the next day they were in Coutances, 2 days after they were down the department in Avranches, and 3 days after they were already very far, you know. But people, most of the people don't know about those 2 months, June and July, okay, at Normandy. And I think that as far as I remember, 25% of all the losses of the 90s during World War II, they were lost during those 2 months.
Well, is there anything I didn't ask you about that you want to put out there?
Well, no, I think we have made a kind of small resume about, okay. Well, anyway, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be able to say a few words for you, you know. But of course, for me, I feel it is important that people from the outside can come here and give their own vision of what is going on or what might be done, or okay, or if there are any changes, you know, and if we have to have another reunion, where, when, stuff like that. Okay,
sure.
So let's say I'm proud and happy to be able to be there.
Well, thank you for the difference you've made in so many lives, and thank you for your example. I think people are, as they hear how much you care, it makes them care a little bit more. So thank you.
Well, thank you for listening to me.
What a privilege that has been. Christian Levoff, if you're ever in Perrier, you're going to have to check out his 90th Infantry Division Museum. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, inviting you to join us again next time when we'll be reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.